This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Weekend's almost here. You headed for a dinner party? You need to know how to be the star guest? Okay, here we go. The host of the podcast turned radio show Dinner Party Download. Join us now to tell us how to win your dinner party. The show is described as the arts and leisure section of the public radio world, and it features celebrity guests, musical picks, culinary tips, and etiquette advice. In fact, we will take your calls today. Give us a call, 877-962-9862. You can tweet us at hashtag SOT. If you've got an etiquette question, these guys are here to answer it. And, you know, it may be helpful or not, but you can call us, 877-962-9862. Joining our dinner party during the lunch hour, our dinner party host, Rico Galliano and Brendan Noonman, are here with us. Welcome. Great to have you guys here.
Thanks for having us. I'm Rico on this end.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, you know, here's the thing. You guys are doing the show that I've always wanted to do, although I love this show. But it has, I think, that what you do in that show is the kind of sensibility that I think radio should always have, a kind of real sense of communication. Well, you tell me what you have in mind. I'm telling you what I'm hearing about great things and bringing people together in odd ways, not keeping them too narrowly defined.
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, eclecticism is our bread and butter, I think. We actually had an episode we were listening to the other day that went from talking about Hulk Hogan to an interview with Margaret Atwood.
Where she told a dirty joke.
She did.
She
yeah.
told a kind of off-color joke. Man. She's a heck of a lady. And it's definitely about, you know, mixing things up. And, you know, I think that's the way to do it. A good dinner party can range from the lowbrow to the highbrow. And I think people get sort of caught up in thinking that, especially when they're hanging with public radio folk,
that's
you
right.
want to keep it highbrow.
Yeah, I mean, that's it, isn't it? I mean, you're exactly right. When we talk, our conversation ranges and it goes from low to high. We find it in Shakespeare. He told a lot of dirty jokes, too, and now he's only taught in the academy.
Yeah.
So that kind of thing. But is that something you brought to this consciously?
Sure. I mean, at one point in our show, we always say, all week long you've been hearing this, now for something you haven't heard. And a lot of public radio listeners who listen to this show and others on your air, they're smart. They know what's going on in the world, current events. But sometimes as people get older, they kind of drift away from culture. They're alienated by foodies. And so we decided we would be ambassadors to these worlds, which are interesting, although they can be off-putting based on the mean baristas and other things that make you feel uncomfortable. And so we kind of curate those things for folks.
And in the way that we do at a dinner party, you have an icebreaker, kind of a little joke to begin the thing.
Yes, yeah. Very little.
I love them, but that's me. So would you do that for us? I mean, let me put you on the spot. How about an icebreaker right here and
sure.
now?
Sure.
Do you want to get start with yours?
Yeah, my favorite is from a British musician named Ed Harcourt, and his icebreaker is, how do you turn a duck into a soul singer?
How do you do that?
You put it in a microwave till it's Bill Withers.
Wow. See, that's good. I like that.
It's pretty sweet. Yeah, this was from Hugh Bonneville of Downton Abbey. Speaking of high to the lowbrow, it's what do you do when you see a spaceman?
I don't know. What do?
You park in it, man.
See, they have to be clean and short.
They're right at the top of the show. They also have to be bad, apparently. They're not usually good.
No, that's kind of great stuff. And the other thing you do is ask your guest what question their least favorite question to be asked.
Yeah.
So I will ask you that now. Yours.
I mean, our least favorite question is probably, where's Kai Ryssdal? What does Kai Ryssdal look like?
We're produced out of the same offices as Marketplace.
Marketplace is our sister show, and Kai is a friend of the show and has made appearances, and so people are obsessed with him. Even my own niece, she asked me about Kai.
Nice show, but what about Kai?
Yeah.
For me, oh man, what is the question? We were talking about this beforehand. I'm totally blanking on it. Oh, it's when I'm at a dinner party. And somebody is kind of like, oh, so you're the dinner party guy. All right, go. It's less a question than a demand, really. It's like
they expect you to be on.
That's right. You could carry a little, you know, sort of you carry your theme, certainly. So you could just play that, a little kind of set of speakers and then talk over
sure.
it.
It'll
all come back to you. I'm going to get these etiquette questions going right now, and then we can kind of punctuate the show with these things. We've got some Twitter questions already. Babes of NPR ask, are wedding presents necessary if one has to fly to the wedding? Isn't our presence present enough?
Yeah, they are. You disagree?
Yeah, but go.
So we have this etiquette segment on our show. We have Emily Post's great-great-grandchildren come on once a month to kind of act as a backstop and make sure. But I think they'd agree with me here. You know, you have to balance tradition with the modern world. And if you're going to a wedding, that's one of the last kind of interactions, I think, in modern society where you have to deliver a present. And so just because you flew there, it doesn't have to be a big present. You could actually, you know, make a collage using the receipt from your plane ticket or something like that. And you could be passive aggressive about it. But you do have to get them something, and you have to get it to them within a year.
See, I agree with everything that Brendan said. I just also think that in the modern world, people are so busy that they really won't notice if you didn't give them a present. So if you can't afford it, you can get away with
it. Well, that's true, but we can advise, though. You know what, though?
The bride's mother's going to notice.
The bride's mother is going to regret that you flew in the first place.
That's true. So. Once we've had a little bit of that champagne.
Rico Galliano and Brendan Neunman are here, the host of Dinner Party on NPR. And just tell us how this began. We call it Dinner Party now. It began as Dinner Party Downcast. Downcast.
We're very downcast.
We are downcast. We listen to the Smiths.
Sad.
We met each other putting on goth makeup together in the bathroom of Marketplace.
Watching Bender's films.
No, we were both producers at American Public Media, as we mentioned, Marketplace. We worked at Marketplace, which was a show about money. We didn't have any money. What we did have was a great interest in culture and music and movies. We're culture vultures. And we both found that when we would go out in the evening, people weren't asking us about money tips. They're asking us about movie tips and food tips. And so we thought, hey, this is kind of a blind spot for public radio. What if we did a show that only focused on the great stuff that people ask us about?
Yes, and it was started. And the idea also was that for people with very busy, quick lives, that it would be very quick. The original podcast was like 15 minutes long, the idea being that you could listen to it on the way to the dinner party and kind of get brushed up on what you needed to know for it. But then we started realizing that we were getting these really great guests and talking to them for literally, once we edited it, it would be like 2 minutes and 50 seconds.
Which is outrageous.
Ridiculous. And when I think it was when we finally got, like, Spike Lee came on the show and I had to edit it to something like 3.5 minutes. It was like, this is ridiculous. We need to start expanding this. And now it's a full hour show on the radio.
877-962-9862, the number to call with your etiquette question for the host of Dinner Party podcast originally, and now it's a Dinner Party on American Public Media, heard on your public radio stations all throughout the land, including this one right here. So, and we do have other etiquette questions. NC Beer Wench.
This is
great. The babes of NPR. We got to figure out who that is. tips for preventing or deprogramming knee-jerk sailor cursing reaction when in traffic. This is a road rage etiquette.
You're asking the wrong person here. I live in L.A., and I think if you don't curse in traffic in L.A., you might be driving deceased. I'm terrible with it, and I actually find that the opposite is true, that if I have people in the car and I'm purposely keeping myself from cursing aloud at the fellow drivers, that I drive worse.
Mm. Yeah.
Because I'm so concentrated on not blurting things out that I do terrible things. So I guess my suggestion is let it flow.
Mm-hmm. A tip could be if you have a friend who has a child, travel with them, because I learned my sister has some kids and I started to flow while I was driving, and when their little pitchers have big ears, and you quickly get stern looks, and you learn to curb your foul words. But if you're alone in the car, go for it.
Well, here's the thing: this is a great karma moment for you. You're allowed, and this allows
karma.
You, karma. God, my karma ran over your dogma.
You
can think.
Yeah, I like that. You should do a joke for us.
Yes,
because it's your opportunity to now reverse some of that anger that is now becoming your prison. And you say to yourself, this is my opportunity to think about all that other driver is going through, all of the pressures and anxieties that have forced that driver to, in such a ridiculous, idiotic way, cut me off when he's having a worse day than I am. And you'll find that if you just take that moment, it starts to flip your karma.
Have you driven in L.A.?
No,
there are no moments.
I'm offering this advice. It's never worked for me.
I was also thinking you could just text.
That's great. So you do that. This is not your first trip to North Carolina, right?
This is not. We've both been here on different occasions. I as a kid, I went to Duck a couple times and ended up wearing a really embarrassing T-shirt for a couple years that had a duck on it. I can't believe when you get older, you're like, why did my parents let me do that? that was my first trip here. And I've been through Chapel Hill a couple times at different points.
I went to the Outer Banks for spring break, but at the University of Pittsburgh, our spring break was very early, so there was no one there, which was actually beautiful. It's beautiful out there, as you know. And I very specifically remember going to Kill Devil Hills to a club called Mexicano, which I have looked up since. It no longer exists, and that's too bad. It was Mexican food and punk rock.
Wow.
And it was like a dream come true for me at that time. It was just like everything I wanted. We didn't have much Mexican food at the time in Pittsburgh.
Well, there are clubs out there that actually exist for only a week, and then they kind of flip ownership.
Yeah,
but that's part of the thing. Hey, Merge Records is also a part of your show, and of course we love them dearly here in this part of the world. Tell us about your relationship with Merge.
Well, we're in town. We're to do an event with the Merge Festival. We are fans first and foremost of their music. Before we even had the show, I think I can speak confidently for both of us. We listened to Superchunk, The Clientele, all these bands that we love, and we've had some of their people on our show. Destroyer, Dan Behar's been by, and other musicians, but we have a firewall between journalism and our interests, but it kind of got a little blurry this time. They're just fans of our show, and they asked if we would come out and host an event. So that's what we're going to do tomorrow in Chapel Hill. We're going to, at the Nightlight, we're going to be interviewing the founders of Merge as our guest of honor. We're going to have Teenage Fan Club will be our backup band. They're going to be playing covers of songs they would play at a dinner party.
Yes.
And it's going to be a great time.
I think so. Plus, it's free. Oh, that's the best part.
Like our podcast.
It's at 3 p.m., by the way, I think. 3 or 3:30, I think.
Talk about that firewall. I mean, that's a weird thing. You know, in one sense, you have to be sort of deeply interested and passionate about what you do. But then again, you have to sort of be careful not to make it your own personal kind of treasure chest of craziness that you like, right?
Oh, yeah. That is hard, and it becomes increasingly hard as I become. I've often said that I would do this show better on my own when I was younger and I had like my feelers out more. It's hard for me now to go like, oh, I used to love that guy. I'm going to totally want to interview him, when it's like there are plenty of other people that are doing important work. Basically we have our producer Jackson Musker, I think, really helps us kind of balance our own tastes. And we're just culture vultures. We like, you know, try to read as much as we can and see what's out there and expose ourselves to new things.
But we're in a lucky position where there's nothing we have to do. We're a weekly magazine, and people come to us. We're usually a little bit ahead of schedule. So we had Weird Al on a few weeks ago. This week, it turns out he's the first. He released the first comedy album to chart on the Billboard charts since 1967 or something like that.
Right?
Or one of the top number one records.
Oh,
something like that.
And it was probably his in 1967.
It could have been. Right? But so we're a little bit ahead of the curve, and that allows us to kind of pick who we want on. And we've turned down people that are doing very popular things that we just thought wasn't really quality content. So we do have a filter in place.
Well, and how do you do that? Because, again, it's so when you had Weird Al on, for instance, his etiquette, what he was talking about, at one point putting eggs in the dryer.
Yeah. Yeah.
He had a good answer for why you shouldn't do that. But, again, excuse those who might.
Yes.
Be drying their eggs. I think that was his answer. The idea that you're going to have somebody on, talk about their album, talk about their career, things that we're all interested in, and then put them in the situation where we don't expect them, right?
Sure.
I mean, that's what makes the show cool. So what it means is kind of sky's the limit, that you're breaking a lot of the formats in a sense, but you still have to sort of stay within some range of expectable. How do you manage that?
Well, Weird Al's a good example. So he's someone that is going to be all over, as he has been. You know, he's dropped videos everywhere. And we didn't want to do the standard interview with him. That's one of the leading principles of our show. When we approach a guest, we're like, how do we make this interesting? Each of our interviews, we ask our guests, tell us something we don't know, because we want to have a moment that's real and live as something they haven't talked about.
Yeah.
And so Weird Al came along, and we're like, Weird Al, etiquette questions, right? We'll talk to him about his album, but let's get him in real life situations. You mentioned the egg in the washing machine. I think someone asked a question about how they put their clothes in the dryer, but someone removes them while they're still damp.
Yeah, they're in an apartment complex, and another tenant had left their clothes in the dryer. And so the writer had taken them out to do his own clothes, and the person had retaliated by putting an egg on his drying clothes.
Which Weird Al endorsed. Surprise.
Well, apparently he thought that people do this frequently. If you have damp eggs, what are you going to do? I think was
yeah.
His.
And then he, you know, was like, eat it.
Brendan wanted him to say that.
One of the great things that's happened, I think, in public radio, this is a little inside baseball, but I don't think it is, because people who listen to public radio may have noticed, particularly people of a certain age, will notice that things have expanded. I owe it all to Car Talk, which allowed public radio to smile. Because up until that show was on the air, and I was working there then, you couldn't. You couldn't. In fact, we were not allowed to smile. You had to check your smile at the door on M Street when you walked in. And things changed. And there's a kind of let a thousand flowers grow. Your show came about because you two wanted to do something. You put it up on a podcast, and it didn't get done by American Public Media as a committee or NPR as a committee. You just went out and did your show and proved it. And then
yeah.
8 p.m., you know, American Public
We're pretty
Radio
awesome.
Yeah.
There were some late nights at the famous Frank Stanton Studios where Marketplace wraps up, people leave, and Rico and I would stick around, use the phones, maybe say we were working with Marketplace early on to book some guests. And then what happened was our download numbers were at a certain level that our company was like, hey, guys, let's proceed with this. It's an exciting time. I think what you were referring to, and I think public radio has gotten much better at this, is sometimes I call it willfully homely. Like, I feel like sometimes if there's three topics, they're like, let's pick this one because they want to do, and they do great, earnest work. And I think that's really important. I think you need to not just do the headlines, but I do think that there's some really, for lack of a better word, sexy stuff that public radio should be covering because it's in the public and we are public radio.
And by the way, we mentioned Marketplace. Marketplace was really good at that too, kind of bringing that into the news world, that they weren't afraid
covering business news with style.
Yeah, business news, the most square thing that you could imagine at one time, and they do it with, you know, a wink.
Well, because that's how people are. I mean, if you're doing hard news all the time, you're going to get responses from people who love that story, and then you think that's all, that you sort of reduce that listener to that and don't understand that they go to dinner parties too, drink vodka, make dirty jokes. They do all those things in addition to love your in-depth report on the sort of the inner circle of the Syrian guard.
Well, I mean, the other part of that, though, is, look, Rico worked at Savvy Traveler, was a reporter at Marketplace. I got my start at Fresh Air with Terry Gross. So even though we're telling jokes, there's a cocktail segment, we know the parameters, we know our audience, and so we keep it within the realm of intelligence. And also APM is a really high journalistic standard that they keep us to.
Yes. If it was, I think, left to our own devices, it would be a little bluer than it probably is.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's it. I mean, you've got to be smart. You've got to actually read the papers.
The after-dinner party download.
That comes next. Okay, we got some more tweets coming in. Aurorus says, what's a not creepy way to talk to a musician you really like before or after a show?
Oh, man. We've gotten this question that we've posed to other musicians. I know that their answer is usually like, just come up and just say, you know, that you appreciate my work. I want to hear that you appreciate my work, but then kind of be on your way.
Full stop. Man.
Yeah, basically, like, you're not this person's friend, and they're probably not going to date you or become your friend. Right. If that happens, wonderful, but be prepared to go, like, love your work. I think that you're awesome, and split.
Yeah, don't be intimidated. I mean, look, these people are on stage for a reason. There's a reason they decided. They want adulation, and it's really nice if people are honestly responding to their art. But yeah, when it gets into the realm of personal stuff, you should probably leave.
Leave the stocking at home.
So was there a moment, you have a lot of fun, especially with celebrity guests who, you know, have varying degrees of appreciation for their own talent and place on the spectrum. And sometimes you have to be careful. And have you ever sort of run afoul of that, tried to be just a little too glib and they didn't appreciate it?
I did, although it's hard for me to mainly because I do think that this was my fault. But it was actually Ewan McGregor who was a perfect gentleman, a really nice guy. But I led, you know, as can be our want, like with a joke. It's like the question that you want to ask. It was like basically on the way to that interview, I was asking everybody. I was saying, hey, I'm going to interview Ewan McGregor. And male or female, everybody was like, oh, my God, that dude is the sexiest person alive. So I led with some version of what's it like, you know, dealing with, like, you're a very serious actor. And yet when I talked to people, that was the first thing they said. And I don't think that was the thing to lead with because he is a serious actor.
Yeah.
We've think about this a lot. I mean, I think that we successfully thwarted an ego. And I think he'd be fine with this saying that with Val Kilmer, who we brought onto our show. He was doing a production as Mark Twain in Los Angeles, and he came on and he performed as Mark Twain. He did etiquette questions, and at the end, we were like, Mark, tell us about Val Kilmer. And he was like, oh, he can be kind of difficult. And then we unpacked
done.
And then we were able to get him to talk about his
ego. Done. Yeah. Great risk, and it paid off.
That was amazing.
Rick Galliano, Brendan Noonan, host of Dinner Party, thanks so much for being here.
It's a pleasure, Frank. Thank you for having us.
They're going to be taping a show it's a live event tomorrow night at Nightlight in Chapel Hill. It's 3:00, part of Merge Records' 25th anniversary celebration. If you missed that, you can go to our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, Lisa Fisher from 20 Feet from Stardom. Please stay tuned.